The people in charge of budgeting for public services often struggle with how much money to put into local jails and state prisons. In the last few years, we've watched both of our states face issues with tight prison space. In California's case, it was just plain overcrowding. Oregon faced a similar issue, but in a future tense. Oregon would need to add prison space if it stayed on the same track. So legislators tweaked the system 2 years ago in the hope of sending fewer people to prison, thus avoiding the need for more prison space. This year, the legislature has to decide how much money to put into that effort. And to get some idea on what the questions and the answers are, we turn to a community corrections director. Kiki Parker-Rose is the director of Klamath County Community Corrections and is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange. Welcome to the Exchange, Kiki.
Thank you. Good morning.
For the folks who might not know, community corrections versus regular corrections, is there a difference? It's not all the same thing, right?
So community corrections is actually your adult parole and probation system. Regular corrections generally is jails and prisons. So we're the out-of-custody folks that provide supervision services and sanctions.
Is it often that the parole and probation are what somebody gets instead of jail time for first offenses? Is it often there, or do people often end up spending jail time? Does it just matter totally on the offense?
It depends on the offense, but most people receive probation. The prosecutors follow a sentencing guidelines grid. The crimes result in probation, or some result in a prison sentence right out of the gate.
All right. So it will be prison if it's a felony. We're talking prison at the state level, not...
So most felonies do get probation. Mm-hmm. If you have a crime that's significant, person-to-person or multiple property offenses or those types of things, those generally carry a prison sentence.
How comprehensive are parole and probation? I mean, if you watch just, you know, TV shows about crime, and so they check in like, you know, every 3 weeks or so, but I imagine it's a little more comprehensive than that.
Yeah, community corrections across the state of Oregon has really, since about 2003, invested in using evidence-based research to help us identify who we should pay attention to in the community and who is going to do just fine if we don't intervene. For example, we use validated risk assessments to give us ideas on who's likely to reoffend. Then we engage in needs assessments so that we can identify what needs we need to provide the offender to see if we can keep them from committing new crimes. We utilize case planning. We utilize lots and lots of community partners to help us provide enough services to the offender to keep them from committing new crimes. You know, the majority of our folks are drug and alcohol offenders. And then, of course, mental health has really become an ongoing issue for us in the community corrections field.
So when you talk about drug and alcohol offenders, they are offending because they're on drugs and alcohol, or their crimes involve drugs and alcohol?
Both, actually. Mm-hmm. Some are offending to find ways to, you know, supply their habit. Others are long-time drug or alcohol addicts that are engaging in things that we look at typically as a crime.
And what, I mean, is there an approximate percentage of drug and alcohol-related cases within parole, probations, community corrections?
I can talk about Klamath specifically. Mm-hmm, We've identified about 78% of the people that we have under supervision have some sort of alcohol, drug, or mental health issue.
So wow. So clearly, if you deal with alcohol and drug issues, you have cleared up a lot of the caseload.
We really have.
Wow. So what are some of the programs that are available then? Again, it's more than just visiting with the probation officer. And you talk about things like validated risk assessments. I mean, so what are you assessing there? And then how do you approach each individual case?
So the state of Oregon went to what's called a public safety checklist. And that is a validated risk tool in Oregon. We look at things like their criminal history. We look at their court appearances. We look at their use, their stability in the community. All of those things then give us a score to tell us if they're a high-risk offender, a medium-risk offender, or a low-risk. If they're high and medium, the Oregon Administrative Rule requires then we move forward with our next assessment, which is a needs assessment. And that's where we identify criminogenic risk factors, those factors that contribute to criminality. And then we target those criminogenic risk factors over the course of their supervision to reduce the factors that are at present that have folks end up committing crime. Those include antisocial personality, drug and alcohol issues. The number one criminogenic risk factor, surprisingly, is peers. And I say that kind of half-hearted. We know that peers impact kids as they grow up, and that continues into adulthood.
So it's a lot of who you're hanging out with, who you're spending time with, and
exactly.
how they influence you.
Yes.
Criminogenic, that's a word that's new to this table.
Yes.
But it just refers to what factors that might lead to criminal behavior.
Yes. Yeah.
Interesting. So when you get a situation where you're reviewing all the potential risks with a client, and you figure out that the peers are a big part of the problem, what then is the remedy? I mean, do you get these people to stop hanging out with the people they've been hanging out with?
We look towards harm reduction at that point, where we're looking at what can we engage them in pro-socially that takes them out of their current environment where they're, you know, embedded in criminality and move them into a more pro-social setting. That can include things like cognitive behavioral programming, which many community corrections agencies across the state do themselves or contract out with service providers. We try to limit their contacts with those people that they've continued to commit crimes with. And then again, for example, in my county, we are heavily involved with the faith-based community as well as peer-to-peer support and peer mentoring. And those help us redirect them from that criminal element into a more pro-social community setting.
Kiki Parker-Rose is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the director of Klamath County Community Corrections. We're talking about what goes on in her department, specifically in Klamath County, and a larger look at the idea of justice reinvestment of the state of Oregon, an issue in the current legislature, because the legislature is looking for ways to beef up programs like Klamath County Community Corrections to make sure that it doesn't have to build new prisons anytime in the near future. Join us on the exchange with questions or comments, 800-838-3760 across the listening area, 800-838-3760. Email address is jx@jeffnet.org, or check out Kiki's picture on Facebook. So clearly there's a number of balls to keep in the air when you're trying to make sure that you're keeping people out of custody, out of criminal behavior. Does it involve a lot of expenditure of money, or is it just a lot of contacting? When you talk about faith-based groups, for example, you're not going to give them government money, but
correct.
But you have to have a lot of contacts going on a lot of times, don't you?
You do, and we, community corrections across the state, we're funded to provide a balance of supervision, which is generally a parole and probation officer type setting, services, and that's where we look at our alcohol and drug services and the mental health services and the COG programming and that kind of thing, and then the sanctions result in the jail or, you know, the ankle bracelet monitoring or something like that. So we look at what our priorities are, and for us it's alcohol and drug and mental health, and so we used to contract for that service. And excuse me, however, since the Oregon Health Plan has expanded, we now have the ability to get a lot of our folks services because they qualify for the Oregon Health Plan. So that has reduced our need to fund certain things, and then allows us to fund more important things like where is somebody going to live. So we look at what are their basic needs. Well, housing is a basic need. If we can't provide housing for somebody, how can we expect them to be alcohol and drug free and not go couch surfing at all their friends' houses? And so there's lots of factors that we look at, and statewide some of the reinvestment funding that's been given out is paying for big things like housing and transition housing and helping folks as they return to the community from prison find housing, help with employment and education, as well as those things that other agencies or funding can provide outside of community corrections.
So you're working with the offender to make sure that you're helping them find a level of stability in life that leads them to not end up being repeat offenders and the kinds of people who end up in prison.
Right.
Is it expensive to do things this way versus the way that we seem to oscillate in America between, well, let's do good things and see if we can keep them from offending versus let's just lock them up and throw away the key? Is it more expensive to do community corrections the way we're doing it now with putting money into a number of different programs and trying to get stability in their lives versus just sticking them in jail for a while?
It's less expensive to keep somebody in the community than it is to incarcerate. For example, it's about $85 a day, I think is the most recent number, to have somebody incarcerated. It's about $16 a day for us to provide supervision of that person in the community. So you can see there's a significant savings just in that. And then if we're creative, which we should be in community corrections, and we should be going out and asking our community to help us, hence community corrections, to help us engage these folks, then we're going to be more successful. So the upfront dollar amount is worth the long-term reinvestment that we're looking at.
What kind of leeway do you have, though, given the passage more than 20 years ago of Measure 11 in the state of Oregon, which requires certain sentences for certain crimes, period?
Right. We have no leeway on Measure 11, and that's not what we're what the legislature is targeting. We're not looking at violent offenses, you know, your murders or rapes or any of those types of things. This is for nonviolent property offenders. So those folks that are stealing cars or taking money from an employer, those types of things. That's what this is about. We're not talking about nonviolent we're not talking about violent offenders. We're talking about nonviolent offenders.
Burglary, theft, vandalism. Stuff where people aren't actually hurt.
Driving while suspended, felony.
Okay.
You know.
Kiki Parker-Rose, again, our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, Klamath County Community Corrections Director. Join us on the exchange at 800-838-3760 or jx@jeffnet.org. So I'm just guessing then it was programs like your program at Klamath County Community Corrections that at least were looking for an influx of more help from the state in an effort to keep people from offending all the way up to state prison. In other words, 2 years ago, this is what the legislature said. Let's do more of this rather than build prisons.
Right. Yeah. And so, you know, again, all of us in community corrections looked at creative ways that we can utilize the money, knowing what the needs of this population were. And it's different in Klamath and some of the southern Oregon counties because we were completely decimated several years ago in our public safety system. You know, you look at some of the other – our neighboring counties are really struggling public safety-wise. Klamath wasn't in – any different position. We had
because of the loss of federal timber funds.
We had two jail pods open, which is 88 beds. Well, we supervised 935 people. That just wasn't enough for us to be able to impose short, swift sanctions to increase behavior change because we can combine treatment, short, swift sanctions, and supervision together, and we can get a more positive result. So in our community, we made a decision that we lacked sanction capacity. We opened a 44-bed jail pod that had previously been vacant. We put treatment in the jail pod, including alcohol and drug treatment, mental health treatment. We have education programming as well as transition programming. And so anytime one of our folks, and I'll say folks, anytime one of our offenders violates their conditions, we now have the ability to impose this swift, certain sanction, which the research tells us is the most adequate way to deal with offender behavior, stick them in custody, they get treatment programming, then they come back out to our facility where we've opened a one-stop shop, and it's a seamless transition. Without 3194 funds, we wouldn't have been able to do this.
So the sanction always, though, comes with the treatment as well. It's not just we lock you up punitively. So there's the stick there in case they're not taking the other carrots. But even within that stick, it sounds like they get the carrot of treatment.
They do. You know, there's a few exceptions to placing some folks in the pod. But the majority of the folks are coming into the C pod where they're getting treatment programming. They're connecting with their providers. They're coming back out into the community and continuing.
And they know where they're going next.
Absolutely.
I mean, when they're in the pod, they know that they're going to be out soon and what they're going to be doing.
Right.
And so it sounds like what the legislature has to decide this year is how much to invest in the programs because this is the real gearing up of getting into this.
Yes, that's really the ball on the table. The executive budget came out with about $58.5 million. For reinvestment statewide, and then the co-chair's budget came out with about $20 million. And so there's a big movement to look at what the cost savings were, or cost avoidance, if you will, and reinvest those funds in the communities because communities are becoming very creative. They're working together and they're trying to find solutions locally because these people come back to our community. They go away to prison, but they come back. And so if we can do something with them before they go away, you know, it's less expensive. We're probably going to be more successful. And that's really what we're striving to do is find what the research tells us nationally that we should be doing with this population and then use that research in our local programs to be successful.
How different, then, is community corrections now from what it was, say, 10 years ago? Were some of these programs just beginning to be thought of then? I mean, Or is it something that has been growing steadily over the past 20 years or so?
I'll tell you, when I started, it was the tail-em, nail-em, jail-em philosophy. That was about 22 years ago, where you went out and you arrested somebody and you threw them in jail, and you were like, I can't understand why this person's not changing. So in the last 20 years, we've come around to let's identify the factors that are causing criminality and let's address them, because we know that just incarcerating people does not change behavior.
You can't pull it, just say no on them. Just cut it out.
Stop doing that.
It really doesn't work like that. All right. Do you end up getting a fair number of questions, though, from the community about people saying, well, aren't we just really coddling criminals? That sort of, I mean, I'm sure you've heard this a few times.
Yeah. We get that, well, you're just being soft on crime. And so we really need to think about, we need to be smart on crime. There's no research that tells us that locking people up for a significant period of time changes their behavior. There is research that says if we use programming, short sanctions, supervision, that we can change criminal behavior. That's what we're focusing on.
So you mentioned the budgeting for this, that it was it the governor's budget, and now the past governor, Governor Kitzhaber, was the one who recommended, what, $58.5 million for the biennium?
Yes, it was.
All right. So, but the co-chair's budget is recommending just $20
million? At this time, their budget that they released was $20
million. Wow. Have you had a chat with Peter Buckley, for example, who's the House Ways and Means co-chair?
There's lots of conversations happening, and I think the real goal is to educate people about what we've been able to do since we started receiving this money, not just, in my county, but several counties around the state. Even here in Jackson County, they've been able to open jail beds and provide treatment in custody. And so we know that there's some really creative things happening in communities that are specific to their community that are fulfilling the need that they have to change criminal behavior. So I think educating folks, and I think, the belief that we need to incarcerate people is something that we're going to have to at some point overcome and really realize that the research tells us that's not what we need to be doing. And so there's lots of conversations between many affected agencies, from victim services to prosecution.
It's easy to talk about the money proposed for this biennium, somewhere between $20 and $60 million, basically. What was the money that was used passed in the original version of HB 3194?
They allocated $15 million statewide.
Okay, so yes. It would be a raise one way or the other. And how much, for example, did Klamath County Community Corrections get?
We received about $373,000 over the biennium. Mm-hmm. So it wasn't enough just to open the jail pod. We were able to leverage some of our partners to help us with that, including our local mental health provider. Gave us some money to open our pod. Our sheriff had received some state funds. He gave us that money, and then community corrections money. So we sort of took a Band-Aid approach because we knew that this is what we needed in our community, and we knew it was important for the folks within our own agency to have the ability to sanction offenders when they violated.
Were several of those bits of money that you described, though, along the lines of, we can do this time, but then the legislature's going to have to step up and do it next time around?
They are, especially the mental health funding, and as well as even the sheriff and community corrections funding. We're going once again into a budget year at the local level where we're going to be short at the county level in funds, and so we're trying to come up with, again, creative ways to continue something that we know has been successful in our community.
So the $373,000 that you got is on top of what's the general budget for Klamath County Community Corrections?
We get about just about $3 million.
$3 million, okay. So yeah, I get about a little more than 10% more than to be able to run the programs you've been running just in this last biennium. But that's for 935 people, you said?
Yes.
That's a lot. And is that number going up over time? Is it stabilizing? Is it going down?
So we've seen about a 235 offender increase in the last 2 years. We have a lot of, anomalies in Klamath County that are contributing to that, but it's a significant increase for us, and we're busting at the seams trying to provide the supervision just on a day-to-day basis.
So it's the basic message sounds like, you were going to need the same kind of money we had last time, but more of it from the state, obviously, to be able to continue programs like this, where you're working a lot harder with people as individuals and working with their individual cases to make sure that they don't turn into the kinds of people who will end up in state prison, costing a lot more money to the folks of the state.
That's accurate.
So have you been up to Salem to testify on any of this yet?
Our association has testified. I've been to Salem a lot, but we have certain folks within our association that have been providing testimony, and we've been working really hard with our other public safety partners trying to strategize on the best way to get the message out about all the really positive things that have happened because of reinvestment.
if there hadn't been this reinvestment, I mean, this is really an attempt by the legislature to make sure it didn't have to build new prisons. I mean, and do you know what the projections were on how soon a new prison might have been needed and how many beds by, say, I don't know, the end of the decade?
The short term, real quickly, was they would have had to open Deer Ridge, which would have been about a $60 million investment, which is in Madras. And then they would have had to begin building in Junction City, which is about a $600 million investment over 10 years. So we're talking about a significant number of folks going to the institution and a lot of money to start building those programs.
And just looking at the numbers side by side, I mean, even if you get up to the $60 million this year, that's less than the amount that would have been spent on opening the Deer Ridge prison.
Right, and we're providing services to a lot more offenders.
So you said you got $373,000 from the state for the biennium coming to an end the middle of this year. How much do you hope you get next time around to be able to just stay steady with where you are now?
I'd like to have $58.5
million. All for Klamath County?
for us, if it's $58.5 million, it's about $1.3 million coming into our community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have some other projects that we know that we would like to engage in that we think will continue to enhance community safety. This was just the very first hole that we were trying to fill. We have lots of holes.
Okay, so folks who are looking for the term justice reinvestment, this is what they're talking about, getting money to community corrections programs in order to not have to open and build new prisons in the state of Oregon. Kiki Parker-Rose is the director of Klamath County Community Corrections. Thanks so much for explaining this so well today on The Exchange.
Thank you.
Good to have you.